Welcome into the show. Thanks for tuning in this Friday, September the 27th. Welcome to the Daniel Wortman Show. It is yours truly coming to you live from the Dreamagine8 Sports Studios. It is 8 a.m. on the East Coast, 6 a.m. out in the mountains, and all time zones in between and around the world. Welcome to the show. Thanks again for tuning in, for watching. Coming up in just a few minutes, we have Tiffany Weimer joining us again on the show. Really excited to have her back on. She's entered a new phase in her career, and look forward to catching up with her about the new phase, as well as some things going on in women's soccer around the U.S., and around the world, quite frankly. So look forward to having her on here in just a few minutes. Also, it is Friday, and for everybody who is, excited that it is Friday, we have, again, this Friday, today, Open Line Friday. So, join the celebration by finding us on Twitter at Daniel Wortman. Slide into the DMs and send us your contact info. We can talk anything American soccer, global soccer, related. We'll try to get some calls in a little bit later in the show after we have Tiffany on the show. So lots going on today with the show, our second Open Line Friday. Tiffany joining us here in just a few minutes. Exciting stuff happening in and around the show as we continue to try to roll out new segments and new things with our show. And really excited about some of those things going on. One of the things I wanted to get to today, right off the top of the show, is a look at an article that I was browsing through yesterday about Jadon Sancho. So we talked about Christian Pulisic and his journey to become a starter and an impact player at Chelsea. He made a transfer in January, but didn't complete the move until this summer, as he remained at Dortmund for the rest of the spring for Dortmund in that transfer. And that move really was made, to preemptively help Chelsea account for the fact that Hazard was leaving and they were trying to bring in some additional players before they hit a transfer ban. So the club that Pulisic left, Borussia Dortmund, has a player, Jadon Sancho, that much of the world is salivating over. He is a young English player. He's 19. And He did something that had never been done before as an Englishman. He left England to go play for Dortmund. Dortmund had never had an English player play for their first team, and he was the first one to do so. And he left Manchester City right when Pep Guardiola was getting there. Just didn't feel like his first team chances were going to come as quickly as he wanted them to. And, Pep was like, we're going to try to take him through a process and this, that, and the other. And Jadon Sancho was like, I think I'm ready for more. I think I'm ready to do more. I think I'm ready for a bigger challenge. And so he bet on himself. And a lot of people at the time were asking the question, what in the world are you thinking? What in the world are you doing? You're leaving Pep Guardiola. You're leaving Manchester City.
Are you crazy? Sancho, when he left, had never played a first-team match for Manchester City. His friend, Reece Nelson, who's at Arsenal, said, going there was a very bold move. Not everyone would have done it. It was brave. Sancho said, when I left Manchester, there were a lot of people that doubted me, saying it's too early to leave England. It's a big club. I might not play. That it was very rare for an English player to do well in Germany. But he bet on himself. He bet on himself. He knew, despite everything else going on, all the comments in the press, he knew what he wanted. He knew what his potential was. And he wanted to go. He wanted to make a mark, and
he wanted to bet on himself. And this was an opportunity that he felt he couldn't pass up. He has gotten to Dortmund and has become a key contributor. Now, before he got there, Christian Pulisic was the young player that was really getting a lot of attention. You had Pulisic and you had Dembele, who's now at Barcelona. And they were getting a lot of the press. Dembele leaves, and everyone assumes Pulisic is going to really kind of come into his own last season, beginning last August. But Sancho begins to assert himself, and through a combination of injuries and Sancho's performances, Pulisic started slipping down the pecking order. And he got out to Chelsea and so far that slide that began at Dortmund that a lot of people weren't really talking about, especially in the circles of American soccer, because Pulisic, you know, was the darling. He was the shining light, the example. Everyone was wanting to celebrate. A lot of people weren't looking at that. He gets to Chelsea, and now there's a little bit of a struggle. And now he's going to have to really grind and work and find his way out. I think he has the mentality to do so. I think he has the work ethic to do so. From everything that I've seen, everything that I have heard about Christian, I think he's got the opportunity to do so. But this is the reality of an open system. This is a reality of having to prove yourself. This is what merit means. You have a player who bets on himself, who does something that no other Englishman had ever done. He bets on himself, and therefore is seeing the rewards, and it is rumored that either in January or next summer that Jadon Sancho is going to be sold for a lot of money. As it stands right now, the transfer market value on him, I think, is somewhere around $100 million. A lot of money. So, that's the reality of what it takes to deal with an open system from a player perspective. It's not always easy. The opportunities are there, and we talked a little bit about this in regards to Christian, your talent and your consistency matters more than anything else, but there are other factors at play. Agents, favorites of a coach or a manager, favorites of an owner, etc. Maybe it's that you're the new shiny toy, so you get preferential treatment. Whatever the case may be, you have to figure out how to break through and rise above all of that. And it's not just a Christian Pulisic thing. This is every player that you see. That pressure does not exist in American soccer. That pressure does not exist in Major League Soccer or the USL in any level near what you face in Europe. Nowhere. Instead, what players face here in the U.S. is limited opportunity, limited access. You can't rise above and get rewarded. If you look at the rules of Major League Soccer, for example, it's almost a negative for you to be an American player and play domestically in Major League Soccer. Your best bet is to go to Europe, build your name, build your brand, play for the U.S. national team. Then you can come back as a designated player and get paid. Then you can be Michael Bradley. Then you can be Jozy Altidore. And when you are able to accomplish that level, the way the Major League Soccer system is, what is currently the top level of American soccer from a U.S. soccer designation standpoint, when you come back and you do get paid, you're not on a team where players are paid as much or more than you competing for spots. You're one of two or three players on that team getting paid. The rest are getting pennies on the dollar compared to you. You're guaranteed your spot. The ecosystem has a massive influence and effect on the quality of our players and our play. And those are things that we as American soccer supporters and fans have to recognize going forward. And one of the ways that we can do that is taking on some short-term pain for the hope of some long-term gain. And we will explore that a little bit later on in the show. But we've got Tiffany Weimer coming up here in just a minute. But before we do, a quick word from our sponsor this half hour, DuckTick Brand. You can learn more about DuckTick Brand right after this commercial from DuckTick Brand, as we have on one of the co-founders, Tiffany Weimer. But you should go to DuckTickBrand.com and use the promo code DWSHOW to get 10% off of your next order. Get one of their new t-shirts. It is super cool. I encourage you to do that. But they've got really good, incredible products and resources for you as a coach or as a player. And you should check them out at DuckTickBrand.com. We'll be right back after this with Tiffany Weimer. Welcome back to the show. Thanks for tuning in on this Friday, September the 27th. We are really excited to have joining us again on the show, Tiffany Weimer. She's a former professional soccer player, co-founder of DuckTick Brand. She is a girls DA coach with the Oakwood Soccer Club and the director of operations for Yale Women's Soccer. I don't know when you sleep, and I don't know what other titles you have, but I know that you are busy, and we appreciate you finding some time this Friday morning to jump on the show with us.
Thanks for having me.
So when we last spoke, you were still playing over in Europe, in Denmark, I believe, and you know, you made some changes since then. We go from professional soccer player in Denmark to former professional soccer player. What ultimately led to that decision for you this summer?
It was interesting because in Denmark, we accomplished our goal of moving up to the highest league. I scored in my last professional game. I kind of left Denmark thinking, you know, that was a pretty good ending. No one's going to ever have a perfect ending, but that was a pretty good ending. And I had every intention of continuing to play, but I actually came back and decided to go try out for Sky Blue in New Jersey. And interesting enough, I was in training one day and it was hot. It was so hot. We were on turf and the team was doing extra running. And at that point, I just was like, you know what? I don't want to do this sprint right now. I don't want to run. I don't want to do the extra stuff that I have to do. So that's when I kind of realized this is it, because I've always done the extra stuff. I've always wanted to do everything possible to be on the field. And at that point, I was like, that's a pretty good sign for me.
So you realize at that moment that, okay, got to transition, got to do something else. Still love the game, but I'm not necessarily in love with the process of what it takes to stay at my best to be a professional soccer player. So at that point, what's going through your head in terms of options, next chapter?
At that point, I was not really ready for that decision to happen. You know, you could say that you'll be prepared when the transition happens and it's always coming. But, you know, after 12 years, I wasn't really ready for it. And I just thought, I'll see what happens. I'll kind of just, you know, take my time, feel out some options. And then everything happened really quickly. I thought I would just reach out to Oakwood and see if they were, you know, interested in having any different coaches for the year, and they were immediately. And then I was working at the Yale ID camp this summer, and that's when the coaching staff thought it would be good to have me in some capacity working with the coaching staff in the team this fall. So I was like, okay, let's do this. Let's do everything. Let's try everything, see what I like and what I don't like, because that's the only way I'm going to find out. And I just kind of jumped in.
So you start, let's start first down the girls DA soccer coach path. What age group did you, or age groups did you get put with? And how has that process been for you in terms of transitioning from wearing your player hat every day into your coaching hat as your primary hat that you're wearing every day?
I'm actually working with the under 16s, under 17s, and then the under 19s, all with the DA director, Matt Cameron, who oversees everything. We work together. He's been amazing at helping me with the transition from off the field to on the field. And, you know, giving me freedom to work and learn, and also guiding me as somebody who's been in, you know, the youth soccer scene for, I think it was probably 20 years or more. So that's been a really good balance of getting to try things and also, you know, learning at the same time.
Welcome back into the show. It is Friday, September the 27th, we are joined by Tiffany Weimer. If you were watching the show a few minutes ago, we had a catastrophic technological failure. Not quite as catastrophic as the American soccer system, but pretty close. So we are here with Tiffany Weimer, and we were chatting about you know, her transition into coaching and this new chapter of her career and her life from being a professional soccer player to now shifting into being a former professional soccer player. And I was asking you, Tiffany, about the transition and the influence and the conversations that you're having as a DA coach, and kind of what ages are you coaching, and what has that conversation been like? So in your training sessions, in the environment, the girls DA environment, this is a you know, a younger program in terms of how long the program's been around compared to the boys DA program. What is that experience like dealing with these young ladies, talking with these young ladies, and how has your career as a player been able to be a resource for you and for them while you're coaching?
I think it's been really interesting because they are meeting somebody who has already gone through the process that they're going through, from, you know, the first step in playing youth soccer to playing maybe playing a couple years of high school, and then now really focusing on their development, focusing on trying to play in college. I think for them to see that it's, you know, I'm just a regular person live with them every single day, and kind of giving them information about what it takes and what I've had to do to get there has helped them maybe refocus what, you know, they've been doing. Everyone thinks they're working hard. Everyone thinks they're doing the most, but in reality, there's much more you can be doing and other people who are doing more. And I think coming out of the state of Connecticut, especially, a lot of players don't realize that there's a big country, and there's a lot of players that are from California who get to play outside all year round, or Texas and Florida, where, you know, some of the bigger clubs have been developing top level female players for 10, 15 years. And maybe we're a little bit behind sometimes.
So in your work, you're also now taking on this role of director of operations, if I can get my mouth to work this morning, with the Yale women's soccer team. So, and program, what are your roles there, or role, and how is that experience different than what you're doing in terms of with the DA?
At Yale, basically they have everything under control. The staff that works there, Brendan Faherty, he does an extremely great job everywhere he's been, but especially now being able to see him up close. I give my insight when asked, but for the most part, I'm kind of learning and just kind of getting a feel for the college experience, because I've never been up close at a bigger D1 school like this. So I think, you know, mainly my role is just to kind of share my experiences with the coaching staff and my opinions when I watch film or watch practice or the games, and try to just improve a little bit in areas that I can.
So a lot has happened since we had you on the first time, on a macro level as well as on a personal level for you, transitioning from being a professional player to now wearing your coaching hat, your director of operations hat. You're still working with your company, Ductic Brand, who we're big fans of here on the show. And at the same time, this macro world has been going on. The U.S. women's national team won the World Cup this summer in France. as you watched that tournament, what stood out to you in terms of the U.S. team specifically?
I think something that always stands out to me about those players and that team is, you know, there's a mentality that is unmatched by probably any sports team, men or women in the world. I think that when you lose that kind of confidence and know the kind of work that they put in every single day, it's only natural that they are going to be the best team in the world year after year. I think that there's so much to be learned from that group, but I don't always see that trickle down to younger players. They watch women's team and they are usually starstruck. But it's not as a direct impact as I would expect from a young player watching them going home and just going crazy to be, you know, at that level. I don't know if I explained that well, but.
No, I definitely think I'm following with that. One of the things that I noticed about this team during this tournament was what you were picking up on in terms of that, the mentality of that team. I do think is probably the greatest level when it comes to being hunted as, but having that killer elite mentality. We know you're coming for us, but we are still going to come at you. That it might be the best that I've ever seen from a team. It's just a belief, a self-belief, a confidence that is there amongst that group that is in rarefied air. It may be completely unrivaled, and certainly nothing we've ever seen on the women's side. But I would say of any sport, male or female, that I've ever seen, just to know that the world is coming for you. And everything is coming at you, and still having the ability to just continually rise to the challenge and meet it, you know, it was impressive. In the case of the Women's World Cup, what did you see from other countries, other teams watching the tournament? Do you feel like you're seeing the game? You know, you spent time in Europe, you spent time in Brazil. Do you see the game growing around the world, and do you see the quality continuing to get better? Was that shown for you in this World Cup?
Yeah, for sure. It was really enjoyable to watch Spain play against the U.S. and some of the England games. I think one thing that I've noticed since playing in WPS and NWSL, that whenever we have a lot of foreign players in our league and then they go back to their country, I think that, you know, American players kind of become human because you see them every day in training. You see that they make mistakes. You see that, you know, they are not perfect. I think that in the past, the U.S. was always so separate from other countries. So there was just kind of like a magic around them that they were untouchable. So I think the more, you know, that we can get foreign players in the league, it helps the league, of course, but it also kind of helps those countries to not only learn from the American players, but also realize, hey, I can play with them and we can play with them. That's something I've noticed for the past like 8 years.
So, In observing and watching, you brought up Spain. I was big fan of Spain on the men's and the women's side of the ledger. My favorite club team, Barcelona, obviously in Spain. I love watching the Spanish national team play on the men's and women's side, and I think the women's program is going to continue to grow and rise there in Spain. Bill Plaschke, a columnist for the LA Times, right after the World Cup, published an article with the headline, Los Angeles' Latina club is trying to change the face of women's soccer. And one of the things that he brought up in this article is he said, during a victory speech in New York City this week, U.S. star Megan Rapinoe said, "We got white girls, black girls, and everything in between." And he pointed out, actually, they don't. The team had five players of color, but no Latinas. And he was, his whole article was about this club in LA that's trying to change that, which is a club that's primarily focused on development and opportunities for Latina players there in LA. And he went on to say that the girls from downtown found it hard to relate to a group that doesn't look like them. One of the their 15-year-old striker said, "No, they don't. That's why I like watching them and everything. But I still say my idol is Lionel Messi." When we look at our women's program and our women's team, why is it that we haven't figured out or found more Latina players to integrate into our women's national team?
And don't you think it's for the same reason that we haven't for the men too? You know, it's kind of like we are pretty fixated on having certain players in the biggest clubs in the country. And there's a financial burden that comes along with playing for these clubs that's unbelievable compared to when I played. And I think that we, you know, promote a certain brand every time we talk about, you know, female players and promote female players. And I think that whenever we do that, we push down others. And, you know, it's just like, there's nothing that's been equal or fair, especially in women's soccer. I mean, the answers are, they're all over the place.
So when we look at the league, the NWSL, you spent some time in the league. It was in a tryout for the league that you realized, hey, maybe I need to transition into the next chapter of my career, transitioning from player to coach and administration, etc. We see the investments taking place overseas in some of these women's leagues. Look at the league in England, the FA pouring, I believe it was £75 million into the league. Looking at the NWSL down at nine franchises, how important is it for us as a country to double down and make the NWSL and women's professional soccer the best that it can be, you know, in terms of for our national team, but just for the young ladies of our of the U.S.? How important is it for us to build the NWSL?
I think it's really important. I think that goes without saying. I think a lot of young players right now are smart and they see playing professional soccer as something that maybe would be cool, but it's not going to pay the bills. It's not going to pay their student loans. It's not going to, you know, it's not going to do all that much if you're not in the very small percentage of players that are making a lot of money at the national team level. You know, I think it used to be when I was young, I used to think about being a professional soccer player. And since I didn't know what it looked like, I could imagine that it was this, you know, glorious lifestyle. Because we only had the men's programs to look at. And I think now that the reality of what the league is pretty out there. It's not always it's not glamorous. There's nothing glamorous about it. So if I'm a young player right now and professional soccer is a question in my life, I'm like, well, I'm not sure. You know, I know because I've been through it and I think it's the most amazing experience that you can have as an athlete. But that's not going to be the case for a lot of these younger players who, after college, which usually is the goal in youth soccer, playing in college, there's not much after in their eyes. So if we can have the NWSL and improve it and make it something that's a little bit more glamorous, just a little, I think that we'll get a lot more out of younger players and have a better quality of youth soccer at the girls level.
How important is it when we look at the NWSL, how important is it, do you think, to not just improve the quality, in terms of pay, the player experience, for the current 9 franchises, but to grow that number of franchises so that there's more access to the NWSL geographically around the country?
Yeah. I mean, if the NWSL can figure out improving the teams that are there first and then grow, I think that, you know, players want to go to games. Coaches want to take their kids to games, but there's not enough, like you said.
Is it, when you look at the league, I like, for example, with the U.S. Soccer Federation, has had a big influence over the NWSL. Many have speculated that former president of U.S. Soccer, Sunil Gulati, was in fact the de facto kind of behind the scenes, you know, commissioner, kind of overseeing that project while he was president of U.S. Soccer. And since his departure, that it's not been as big of a priority for the federation. There's a lot of speculation of this agreement between U.S. Soccer and the NWSL finishing at the end of this year, and a lot of uncertainty going forward with the league management, communications on social media, things going on. Read the other day where I believe it was the Portland Thorns didn't even realize they had clinched a playoff spot. And so there's a lot of like league level communication issues or management issues. How, when you're looking at the game from afar, you're in Europe and you're playing, are you able to see those things when you're away? I mean, are you hearing the chatter from former teammates or friends in the game? Is it obvious, or are these things that are kind of behind the scenes that people just don't know about and not really sure why things have sputtered a little bit? Or what is your feeling there in terms of where the NWSL is and some of those areas that need to get addressed in the short term?
I think a lot of the players that I talk to are working hard to change and make the league better. So a lot of the conversations are around the improvements that have happened and where we've come and what we can do to make it better for the players. So I know Yael Verbusch is doing a ton of work in order to improve the experience for players. And I think a lot of the conversation is not necessarily around, you know, all the bad things, but the good things. And a lot of us know what we started with, and that's what's hard, you know. Started with nothing, and I think, you know, watching the Spirit play at Audi and the kind of crowds that they've gotten, and then Sky Blue at Red Bull, you know, you look at those kinds of things and you say, wow, that wasn't happening 3 years ago. That wasn't even coming close to happening. So it's so hard to always focus on the bad and ignore the good, or vice versa, because the reality is we could be gone in a year or two, and no, you know, there's nothing we could do even when we do the best, give our best efforts to improve it.
So looking at the league, looking at, you know, women's professional soccer in the U.S., your transitioning into coaching and, you know, director of operations, you're running, you know, your company, Duck Tech Brand, you have all these projects going on. One of the questions that maybe you don't think about in the moment while you're getting up every day and training to be a professional soccer player is legacy. And when you look at players like yourself, Yael, and others, when it comes to legacy and leaving professional soccer in a better place than what your generation found it. How important is that for you? Leaving a legacy for the next generation where they can kind of build off of where you guys were and where the league is now. How important is that for you?
I think, in my own mind, I'm a legend. And I think about legacy. I'm looking at my trophy case right now and it's kind of smiling. So I think that the thing that is most important to me and that I pass on and that lives on well past my time on this planet is that I love the game. I'm very passionate about it. All the extra stuff that comes with it is great, but it's extra. And I think that a lot of players don't allow themselves to just love the game for what it is, for the feeling that they get when they play. And everybody's trying to get something out of it all the time. You know, they always say, I put all this time in. Parents are putting all this money in. The game doesn't owe you anything. It never will. It never does. But if you can play truly for the love of it, because you enjoy doing it, you will see that a lot of that stuff will happen naturally. And I don't think a lot of people understand that. I think there's always a means to an end. And there's always something extra. There's always something behind the scenes. But if I can, live that life that I've always lived about or within the game and show people that a lot of good can come if you just let yourself love it and put everything into it, then I've done my job, even if I just impact one other person, because that person will pass it on. It'll continue. So that's the legacy that I see for myself as it's about soccer. You know, the rest of the stuff can happen naturally.
So speaking of love of the game, it's obviously influenced every aspect of your life. And one of those is business as well. So, from a business standpoint, you've got DuckDick brand. What's going on with DuckDick and, got anything new that, recently released you want to talk about, or maybe some things down the coming down the pipeline?
That is a great question, and you almost got me. We are unable to release the new products yet, but we do have a bunch coming up in October and November, and we're really excited about them because we're going to hit up a few different areas of the soccer world, which we're excited about. And also some new different products that will only enhance coaches' ability to organize. I think that with that company, when I get to work on DuckDick brand during the day, that's probably when I'm most excited, because I feel like I can work at a macro level when I'm working on that company. And when I'm working with Yael or Oakwood, I'm working on the micro level and trying to, directly impact individuals. But the work that we're doing with DuckDick, we really want to try to influence as many coaches and players as possible with our products and other things that we have going on. So some new stuff coming, but got to keep it on lockdown. Sorry.
We're getting close. October is days away. So
I meant November.
Okay. So we're a few weeks away.
I don't know the month actually. So thank you.
So should we expect an Apple type of announcement? Are we going to have a big showcase countdown? Lines out the door. We got to be getting close to that, right? Close to that. I mean, these products are incredible.
I think one of the problem maybe we have is that we get so excited when we have something and it's ready that we release it as soon as it's usually me when I'm saying to Addie, okay, today we got to do it today, and then everything just comes out all at once. So I think once we get to Apple's level, maybe we can prepare a few days ahead for a release. But
there you go. Well, you just let me know, and I'll get in line with everyone else, and we will get our orders in, and
awesome.
Yeah, I mean, I talk about it every day on the show. I think that the company is fantastic. The products are awesome, and I do look forward to seeing some of the new ones come out, and what those may hold, since we weren't able to get a sneak peek out of you today. We will at least wait with anticipation for November. It's curiously timed with Christmas right around the corner. So well done, whether that was you or Addy, on the timing of the release. A lot of Christmas presents seems to be timed perfectly for that release. So kudos to you guys with that release, and this good luck with the company and the products that you are going to be coming out with. And thanks for coming on the show. Again, for everybody watching or maybe listening to this later, we apologize for some of the technical difficulties we had earlier. We did have a catastrophic failure on the technology side. We hope that we've been able to get all that sorted out and corrected. It seems that the system's been stable since we were able to get back on the air, and appreciate Tiffany's patience with that process and for spending time with us today talking about her career, the U.S. Women's National Team, professional soccer, and always like to talk about Ductic. I love the brand, I love the company, and love what they stand for. So you know, if you get a chance to check them out, go to ducticbrand.com and you'll see their current products. And as Tiffany mentioned, keep an eye on that space, because there will be some new ones coming out very soon, even though she wouldn't tell us exactly what those are yet. Maybe we'll get a sneak peek, right? Right. So thanks for coming on the show today, Tiffany. We really do appreciate it.
Thanks so much for having me.
Thank you. That is Tiffany Weimer. I really appreciate her coming on the show. The sponsor this half hour is Charity Water. You can learn more about Charity Water at charitywater.org. We'll be right back after this.
No one, no man, no woman, no child should ever have to drink green water with bugs, with algae, with disease in it. Bad water and a lack of toilets kills more people than all the wars in the world. We know how to bring clean drinking water right now to every single person on earth. And when you can bring water into communities, it truly transforms them. It changes everything. Right? You could know that you'd made a difference. You could know that you had truly impacted the life of a family, of a community, of a region. There was either clean water or there wasn't. We believe in a world where every single person has clean and safe water to drink, and we will continue fighting until that happens.
पहिला म पनि बच्चा अवस्थामा रहँदाखेरि मैले यो कल्पना गरेको थिइनँ कि तर अहिलेको बच्चाहरूलाई मैले सोद्धाखेरि अथवा उनीहरूलाई क्लासमा गएर तिमी के भन्ने भनेर भन्दाखेरि उनीहरू बच्चाहरूले एक क्लास, दुई क्लास, तिन क्लासका बच्चाहरूले उनीहरूले सहजै रूपमा चाहिँ उपयुक्त गर्न सक्छन्।
म टिचर बन्छु,
सोसल वर्क इन्जिनियर।
I want to be nurse.
Welcome back into the show. Thanks for tuning in and being patient today. We've had a lot of technical issues. Internet outages started happening in the area of the studio yesterday after the show, and we thought everything was sorted out. Had some again this morning, and we apologize for the technical difficulties. We will try to get this show chopped up and put back together and as best we can, and it will be available hopefully later today for the audio podcast to go back and listen to. I really would like to thank Tiffany Weimer for joining the show, being patient. Unfortunately, we just ran out of time today on our Open Line Friday, and maybe we'll do a special edition next week to get more of your feedback on the show. As always, you can watch the show on facebook.com/WRKMN or at danielworkman.com. Find me on Twitter or Instagram at Daniel Wertman. Thanks for watching, following the show. As always, the support is amazing, and we thank you so much for that. We look forward to seeing everybody on Monday. Have a great weekend, everybody. We'll see you then.